All right, ready to dive deep. Today, we're tackling Isaiah 53.
Oh, a classic.
Specifically, you know, zeroing in on that whole servant of the Lord thing.
Oh, that's a big one.
Big one. Lots to unpack there. Our main source, by the way, is going to be a lecture by Robert Van Noy. He's got this whole series on the major prophets.
I've heard of him.
And lecture 18 is where he really gets into Isaiah 53. So that's our roadmap, you know.
That's good.
We're going to unpack what this servant means and, you know, see if this ancient text still has something to say to us today.
That's always the question, isn't it? Like, how does this stuff connect to us now?
Exactly. Well, Van Noy, he jumps right into Isaiah 53.4, talking about the servant bearing our griefs, carrying our sorrows. And it's interesting because this is often, like, connected to Jesus's healing ministry.
Yeah, the miracles, right?
Yeah, exactly. But then, like, why didn't people get it back then? You know, like, they saw Jesus healing people, but...
But they didn't see the bigger picture.
Yeah. They didn't connect the dots. They saw suffering and thought, oh, he must be punished by God. It's like, wait, hold on.
It really makes you think, why did the servant suffer?
And that's where Van Noy gets into verse 5. He says this verse, you know, with its four parallel statements, it really zeroes in on this idea of substitutionary atonement.
Okay, yeah. That's like cornerstone Christian theology, right?
Yeah.
The servant suffering in our place to atone for our sins.
Exactly. And Van Noy even points out, like, 1 Peter 2.24 directly links this passage to Christ's atoning work. Pretty cool how it all connects, right?
Definitely. It's amazing how much these verses from Isaiah pack in theologically.
It's a lot. But Van Noy keeps going. He dives into verses 6 and 7. And here's where we get a clearer picture of, you know, who is this servant?
Right, right.
And it's key because of these verses, they set the servant apart from the nation of Israel. Israel, they were always, you know, complaining about their suffering. But the servant in Isaiah, totally different.
Silent.
Submissive. Yeah, like led to the slaughter, as they say.
Exactly. But Van Noy really hammers this point.
Yeah.
The submission is voluntary. Totally unlike Israel's exile, which was forced on them.
Subtle difference, but big implication. Makes you think, if the servant isn't Israel, then who is it? Van Noy doesn't answer that outright in this lecture, but he drops some hints, you know?
Like he's leading us down a path.
Yeah, like breadcrumbs. And that's what keeps us hooked.
Yeah.
He then goes into verses 8 and 9, describing the servant's death and burial. And it's like bleak, totally hopeless situation, young life cut short, no descendants, just despair.
Heavy stuff. But you know what's interesting to me about these verses? That detail about the servant's burial. Like, first he's supposed to be buried with the wicked, but then he ends up in a rich man's tomb.
Wait, why even mention that? Seems like such a random detail.
Right. But Van Noy explains this seemingly insignificant detail actually happened with Jesus, too. Crucified between two thieves, but buried in the tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, a wealthy follower.
Crazy, right? Hold on. So that little detail about the tomb, it's like, what did Van Noy call it? Inorganic prophecy. Like a clue planted 700 years in advance.
Exactly. And get this, there's manuscript evidence from the Dead Sea Scrolls to back this up. Van Noy mentions this scholar, George McCrae, who noticed that the word for rich man was first written in plural form in the scrolls, but then the scribe changed it to singular.
Like a mid-course correction.
Yeah, like he realized, wait, this prophecy is specific. It's like, wow, these ancient scribes, they were paying attention.
Incredible. But it doesn't stop there. That rich man's tomb, it ends up being super important for confirming the resurrection.
Oh, absolutely. A new tomb. Everyone knew where it was. So when it was empty, it was powerful evidence.
It all ties together. Man, this deep dive is already full of aha moments, and we're just getting started. So Van Noy then shifts gears to Isaiah 53.0. Now, this is where the idea of the servant's life as a sin offering takes center stage. Asham in Hebrew, right?
That's the one. And here's where it gets really interesting linguistically. Van Noy goes deep on the Hebrew word nefesh, meaning life or soul, and how it connects back to Leviticus 17.11 day.
Yeah, I remember that one. Life is in the blood, and blood is offered on the altar to atone for the soul.
Exactly. And that connection is key to understanding Isaiah 53.near. It's saying in the servant's life itself is the sin offering, like his whole being is poured out for others.
Wow. Okay, so we're seeing this picture of the servant's sacrifice emerge. But then Van Noy points out this seeming contradiction in verse 10. It says, the servant is cut off, no descendants, but he will see his seed and prolong his days. Hold on, how does that even work?
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of debate about that one. But Van Noy suggests it might be hinting at the resurrection and the idea of the redeemed becoming the servant's spiritual offspring.
So, like, his legacy lives on through the people he saves. That's a beautiful thought.
It is. And that leads us right into verse 11, which focuses on this phrase, "By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many." And here's where Van Noy gets into some serious Hebrew grammar, explaining objective versus subjective genitive.
Okay, full disclosure, grammar's not my strong suit. Can you break that down for us regular folks?
Sure thing. It basically comes down to how we understand the word his in that phrase. Is it the knowledge the servant possesses or the knowledge about the servant that others have?
Okay, I'm following.
Van Noy argues it's the latter, meaning the knowledge of what the servant did, his sacrifice. That's what ultimately justifies. It's powerful stuff.
So it's not just about the servant himself, but the impact of his actions on others. The knowledge of his sacrifice is what really matters.
Right on. And this leads us to the last verse of Isaiah 53, which talks about the servant's triumph. But this verse, it's often misinterpreted, especially that part about dividing spoils with the strong.
Yeah, sounds a bit violent, doesn't it?
It does. But Van Noy brings in this interpretation from a scholar named J.A. Alexander. He says it's more like an idiom for the servant's success. Not literal warfare, but overcoming, achieving victory for God.
It's like a spiritual warrior, in a sense.
Exactly. And it emphasizes that despite the suffering, the servant's mission succeeds. It's a message of hope and triumph, something that still resonates today.
Amazing. This deep dive has been packed with insights. We've covered so much already. Healing ministry, substitutionary atonement, even those specific burial details, and the ultimate triumph of the servant's mission. And it's all in just 13 verses.
It's incredible how much depth is packed into this chapter.
It really is. And what strikes me is how Isaiah 53 points beyond itself to something more...
like a prophecy waiting to unfold.
Exactly. But Van Noy doesn't just leave us hanging with these abstract ideas. He brings it back down to earth, you know, showing how Isaiah 53 has been understood throughout history, especially in light of Jesus's life and death.
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting, how people have interpreted this text over time. A lot of different perspectives out there.
Definitely. And that's what we'll be digging into next time.
Can't wait. It's wild to think, right? Isaiah 53 was written like centuries before Jesus even lived.
Yeah, way before. But you can't deny a lot of Christians see like a premonition of Jesus in this chapter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
His ministry, the sacrifice, it's all there.
From the healing stuff we talked about to the silent suffering, even the burial, it's like echoes of Isaiah throughout the Gospels.
And that's why this chapter has been so huge for Christian theology, you know?
Yeah.
The framework for understanding why Jesus died.
Makes you think, huh? Like Isaiah 53, it's a lens to view the whole New Testament through.
That's a good way to put it.
But what about people who don't see Isaiah 53 as being about Jesus? How do they interpret the servant?
Well, there's a bunch of interpretations out there. Some Jewish scholars, they see the servant as like representing all of Israel, suffering for the whole world's sins.
Makes sense, given their history.
Right. Others see it more symbolically, like the ideal of righteous suffering, no specific person.
Interesting. So one chapter, tons of different readings.
That's what's so cool about these ancient texts. They make you grapple with big ideas, different viewpoints.
Not about finding the right answer, more like a journey of understanding.
Totally. And Van Noy, he's big on approaching Isaiah 53 with humility. Like, we might only be scratching the surface of what it all means.
True. Now, going back to Van Noy's lecture, he spends a lot of time on Isaiah 53:10, the part about the servant's life being a sin offering. Why is that verse so important?
Oh, man, that verse is the core of it all. It straight up says, the servant's life, it's given to atone for everyone else's sins. Substitutionary atonement, big concept, lots of debate about it.
So like a transaction. He dies so others can be forgiven.
It's not quite that simple. Van Noy says it's not just legal stuff, it's deeper. An act of love, self-giving.
Taking on the burden for everyone else.
Yeah. To bring healing, redemption.
Almost like the servant, he embodies God's nature, you know? Full of love. Even for those who turn away.
Exactly. That's what makes this chapter so theologically rich. God's love, justice, mercy. It's all tangled up in there.
Like we're peeking into God's heart.
It's heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Then it makes you think, okay, if the servant does this, what does that say about how we should live? How do we respond to suffering in the world?
Whoa, big question.
They are. And that's why Isaiah 53 is still relevant. It's not just some old book. It speaks to being human, you know?
Totally. Van Noy doesn't shy away from those tough questions either. He wants us to wrestle with the text, figure out what it means for each of us.
I like that.
Us too. That's kind of our whole thing here on the deep dive. Okay, so moving on. Van Noy gets into verse 11, the servant justifying many by his knowledge. We talked about the grammar, but what does it even mean to be justified by knowledge?
Yeah, it's a deep one. Gets to the heart of what salvation is. Benoit explains this verse. It's about truly understanding the servant's sacrifice. Not blind faith, but grasping what it all meant.
Informed faith, based on knowledge.
Exactly. And that's what brings justification, according to Isaiah. Recognizing the sacrifice, accepting it, that's how we're made right with God.
Okay, that makes sense. But then what about people who've never heard of the servant? Or they don't get the meaning of the sacrifice? Are they left out?
Good questions. And theologians have debated that forever. Vannoy doesn't give easy answers, but he reminds us, God's mercy and grace, they're vast.
Like, we can't box God in, right? His ways are bigger than we can grasp.
Exactly. Studying these texts, it keeps us humble. Our understanding is limited.
Makes you think. Okay, so this deep dive is expanding my mind for sure. We've covered a lot, but one more verse. Isaiah 53.1:12. This is where it gets kind of triumphant.
Yeah, big shift. It's all about the servant's victory, even though it comes through suffering. Remember, dividing spoils with the strong. That image.
Sounds like a war zone.
Right. But Vannoy clarifies it's an idiom, saying the servant will be super successful. Not literal war, but overcoming sin, death.
Like he wins the battle, but he's got the scars to prove it.
Yes. And that victory, it's not just for him, but for everyone who believes.
Powerful stuff. It's crazy how this one chapter, it's both personal and cosmic, you know, individual struggle, but UT also this huge story of redemption for everything.
It is. That's the brilliance of Isaiah 53. So much imagery, deep theology, and it still hits us today.
We've talked a lot about what Isaiah 53 means, but what about its impact? Like, how has it shaped history, how people view God, themselves, big picture stuff?
Oh, that's a great question. We could do a whole deep dive just on that. Isaiah 53, it's been huge for both Jewish and Christian thought.
Okay, let's start with the Jewish side. How's Isaiah 53 been understood in that tradition?
Well, it's complicated. Isaiah 53, it's in the Hebrew Bible, so Jewish scholars have been wrestling with it forever.
Mm.
But there's a lot of different interpretations.
No unofficial take?
Nope. Some commentators, they see the servant as representing all of Israel, suffering for everyone else. They point to like the historical persecution of Jewish people.
So the servant embodies their resilience.
Exactly. God's chosen people, enduring hardship, powerful image.
But that's not the only view, right? What else have scholars said?
Some see the servant as just one righteous person. Maybe a prophet, a king, someone who suffers for their people.
Like a martyr figure, takes on the sin, brings renewal.
Yeah, exactly that. Self-sacrifice, devotion to God. And you can imagine how that idea resonates with Jewish communities, especially during tough times.
For sure. So we've got Israel as the servant, or one righteous person. But what about those who see Isaiah 53 as pointing to Jesus? Where did that come from?
Ooh, that's another whole deep dive. But basically, early Christians, they saw Isaiah 53 as a prefiguring of Jesus, like a prophecy that came true.
All those details we talk about, the healing, the suffering, the burial, they saw them as clues.
Exactly. And this interpretation, it became fundamental for Christian theology, shaped how they understood Jesus's death, the resurrection, everything.
It explained why Jesus suffered, what his death accomplished.
Like making sense of the senseless, finding hope in tragedy.
Man, it's amazing how much impact this one chapter from Isaiah has had, both for Judaism and for Christianity. Shapes how people view God, themselves, the world.
It really does. That's what's so cool about studying these ancient texts. They're not just relics. They still speak to us.
And sometimes the most challenging parts, those are the ones with the most to teach us. Like Isaiah 53 with all its imagery, its deep theological stuff. It's like begging us to keep digging, find more meaning.
That's what makes faith so interesting. It's not about having all the answers. It's about asking the tough questions, wrestling with the mystery.
Speaking of mysteries, Vannoy brings up this kind of puzzle in Isaiah 53.10. It says, the servant will be cut off from the land of the living. Sounds like death, right? But then it says he'll see his seed and prolong his days. Wait, what? How can he have kids and a long life if he's dead?
Yeah, another good question. Scholars love to debate this one. Vannoy thinks this might be pointing to the idea of resurrection.
So not just physical kids, but a spiritual legacy. Like his impact continues even after he's gone.
You got it. The seed could be those who follow him, embrace his message of love and sacrifice.
I like that. Even though he dies physically, his spirit lives on through the people he inspires.
Exactly. And that idea, it's echoed throughout history. Think about people like Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr. Their physical lives ended, but their legacy, it still shapes the world.
Shows you, even in death, there can be life. Our actions can have a ripple effect way beyond our lifetime.
Powerful stuff. And that brings us back to verse 11, where it says, the servant will justify many by his knowledge. We talked about it before, but thinking about this legacy idea, how does knowledge fit in?
Yeah, how does knowing something have that kind of power?
Remember what Van Noy said. The knowledge here, it's not just facts. It's deep understanding of the servant's sacrifice. Realizing what he did, letting that change you.
So it's not enough to just know the servant suffered. We got to grapple with what it means for us.
Right. It's asking, how does his example challenge me? How can I be more selfless, more loving like him?
Knowledge isn't just for study. It's for living out.
Exactly. That's where the real power of Isaiah 53 is. It's a call to action to become better.
This deep dive is really making me think. We've covered so much, the servant's healing, the atonement, the burial details, his ultimate victory. But this idea of a spiritual legacy, that really sticks with me. Even in death, he impacts the world through those he inspires.
It's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Isaiah 53 timeless. It speaks to that human desire for meaning, for redemption, for a life that goes beyond our limits.
Like it gives us a peek into something bigger than ourselves, a reality where suffering and death don't win.
And that idea resonates with people, no matter their background or beliefs. It's something we all grapple with.
Okay, so we've looked at what Isaiah 53 means, the impact it's had. But what about us today? What can we learn from this old text that helps us in our world right now?
That's the question, isn't it? I think there's a lot we can take away from Isaiah 53. It's still relevant.
Give us the top three. Like, what are the most important things to remember from this deep dive?
Number one, empathy and compassion. That's what the servant embodies. He takes on the suffering of others willingly. Doesn't avoid pain, but uses it to heal, to make things whole.
That's tough, especially in a world that feels so divided.
It is tough.
Yeah.
But Isaiah 53 reminds us there's another way. Radical love, self-giving, that's how you change things.
Okay, takeaway one down. What's number two?
Finding meaning in suffering. We can't escape suffering as part of life. But Isaiah 53 says, suffering doesn't have to be pointless. It can be a source of growth, change, even redemption.
So it's not about pretending it's not there. It's about finding purpose in it.
Exactly. And that purpose, it's different for everyone. Could be connecting with something bigger. Could be using your experience to help others make a difference.
Finding the good that comes out of it, even if it's hard.
Yeah. Isaiah 53 shows us, we don't go through tough times alone. Something bigger can help us, even in the darkest moments.
Okay, that's powerful. So empathy, meaning in suffering. What's the third takeaway?
Hope and redemption. Isaiah 53 ends on a high note. The servant wins, beats sin and death. That message, it's resonated with people forever. A vision where love wins in the end.
Like no matter how bad things get, there's always light, a chance for healing.
Yep. And Isaiah 53 says that hope, it's not just a wish. It's rooted in God.
This deep dive has been incredible. We've gone deep on Isaiah 53, the meaning, the impact, what it means for us today, the servant's healing, the atonement, even those little details, the burial, the victory. It's all connected.
We've uncovered a lot today.
We have. But before we go, I got to leave you with this. We've focused on the servant's sacrifice for others. But what does that mean for you? How can you take these lessons from Isaiah 53 and actually live them out in your own life, in your own world?
That's the big question, isn't it? It might start small. Notice the people around you. Help someone who needs it. Forgive someone who hurt you. It doesn't have to be huge, just reflecting that same selfless spirit.
Finding those chances, big or small, to make a difference, like the servant did. And who knows? Maybe those little acts, they'll ripple out further than you think. Just like those tiny details in Isaiah 53, they ended up pointing to something much bigger.
That's a good note to end on.
It is. Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive into Isaiah 53. Hope you enjoyed it. And remember, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep. You know, as we're wrapping this up, I keep thinking about that inorganic prophecy thing Van Noy talked about.
Yeah, it's like finding a puzzle piece you didn't even know was missing.
Exactly. Like, how did Isaiah know 700 years before Jesus that a servant would be buried in a rich man's tomb? It's so specific.
Right. It's like a little hidden message.
Totally. And it just makes you think, wow, these events were meant to happen.
They weren't just random.
No way. And plus, remember the Dead Sea Scrolls back it up.
Oh, yeah. When the scribe changes rich man to rich man.
It's those little details that blow my mind.
They really show you how carefully these guys were working.
But they knew they were dealing with something important.
It really makes you appreciate these texts even more.
It does. So I think we've given everyone a lot to think about. when it comes to Isaiah 53 and the servant of the Lord.
Definitely, we've covered a lot.
From healing to atonement to all those little clues pointing to Jesus.
It's been a wild ride.
It has. But before we go, I want to leave you with this. We've talked about the servant's sacrifice for others.
Right, giving himself up for everyone.
Yeah. But what does that mean for you, for your life? How can you take these lessons from Isaiah and actually use them?
That's a great question.
Like, how can you be more like the servant?
Well, maybe it starts by just noticing people.
Yeah, like the people around you.
Seeing who needs help, offering a hand, or forgiving someone who's hurt you.
Those little things can make a big difference.
They can just, like, those little details in Isaiah point to something huge.
It all comes back to that, huh? Well, that's all the time we have for our deep dive into Isaiah 53.
It's been fun.
It has. Thanks for joining us, everyone. And remember, keep searching, keep asking questions, and keep diving deep.